Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Welcome to Season 5 of The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom, where we talk with enterprise and technology platform leaders about the people, processes, and platforms that make marketing and customer experience successful, scalable, and sustainable. This is what creates an agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advisor and consultant for Fortune 1000 marketing and CX leaders and teams as principal and chief strategist at GK5A and best-selling author, keynote speaker, entrepreneur, and Agile certified coach. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full stack technology services, talent services, and real world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. To sign up for the Agile Brand newsletter and get the latest insights and articles on marketing technology and CX, or to purchase a copy of my latest book, House of the Customer, go to gregkilstrom.com. You can also find all my books on Amazon and other retailers. And now on to the show. Today, we're going to talk about the value of thinking about experience holistically, customers, employees, and the business, so that when it's done well, everybody wins. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Adrian Swinsko, customer service and experience advisor, mentor, author of the book Punk XL, and host of the Punk CX podcast. Adrian, welcome to the show.
Hey, Greg, how you doing? Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to talking about this. And yeah, thanks for having me on your show the other day as well. So let's get to talk with you a few times here. So why don't we get started by you giving a little background on yourself as well as what you're currently doing?
Sure. So my name is Adrian Swinsko. I guess I am an author, an advisor, a thinker and explorer about the sort of service and experience space. I've been focusing on this sort of space for the last sort of 15 years. I do quite a lot of writing. So I have a blog, I have a podcast, I've written 4 books, had a Forbes column for, is it 9 or 10 years? I think it's 10 years this year.
Nice.
And do a bunch of things in this sort of space. I guess on the one side, I advise companies directly with some of the services and experience challenges that they have. And on the other side of things, I work with service providers in this space, i.e. like BPOs or agencies or consultancies or tech providers around doing research or speaking or panels or webinars or, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm really, really interested in more than anything else is how do we develop, nurture, grow, establish organizations that produce better outcomes for both their customers and their people?
Great. Yeah, love it. And yeah, definitely you do a few things there. So I mean, I think it's great because it gives you such a great window into kind of looking at problems from a bunch of different perspectives. And, you know, one of those is, you know, writing your book. I know you've written a few here, but one of the things I wanted to talk about here today was you wrote a book called Punk XL, and that where the XL stands for experience leadership. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. And why don't we start by what do you mean by experience leadership?
So thank you for that. I mean, it's so I should say that I guess a common statement or theme or is commonly accepted that customer experience is one of the biggest differentiators in marketplaces these days, yeah. And the thing about all that, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about, well, we talk about brand leadership, and we talk about market leadership, and we talk about economic leadership, and so on and so forth. But we don't talk about experience leadership and what that means. Yeah. And so I was thinking about that, and thinking about that on the back of the Punk CX book, which just explored CX mostly. And it occurred to me, since that was published back in 2019, it became increasingly apparent that it's no longer sufficient just to talk about customer experience in isolation. and that actually to deliver a great customer experience, and it requires all sorts of different kind of parts to fit together, requires kind of the right sort of employee experience, the right sort of people in that, requires the right sort of organizational sort of like structure and layout and all these sort of things in order to deliver to your customers. It also then requires the right sort of relationships with your customers and the right customers. And then ultimately beyond that, it also, I think, requires a big part of experience, which is growing in the minds of many people, both customers and employees, and also the broader stakeholders, is the impact companies have on the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's a long answer to what is Punk XL. It's trying to not define it, not say this is exactly what it is, but to start a conversation which says, I think we need to talk about this.
Yeah.
And that's what it means. That's what the book is intended to do.
That's great. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of different combinations of things that even that you just mentioned in that explanation, but you know, the book goes into a lot greater detail in many of those things. One thing I wanted to start by talking about is, and it's certainly something I've written about and talked about and think about plenty, is relationship between customer experience and employee experience. And I think more and more organizations are getting on board with this idea that yes, these things are related, but are they doing stuff about it? You know, so what are brands maybe getting wrong when they're siloing? They may have great intentions with employee experience, may have great intentions with CX, but you know, what are they getting wrong when they silo these things and think of them as unrelated?
Yeah, so I think the thing that I struggle with, particularly in terms of employee experience, is the idea that a lot of the times people talk about conditions at work. And how do you kind of like enable kind of that? How do you give people better conditions at work? Kind of be, you know, and support them in their kind of growth and make it easy for them to book time off or take time off or kind of whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But the thing that is missing in the employee experience space is the operational side. What do we do to help people be excellent in the moment and deliver their best? And I think this is particularly highlighted when you think about the situation of, say, a customer service agent. And if you think about how customers are frequently these days trying to self-serve, so they don't want to go and wait in a queue or send a message to somebody to wait for a response. They want to self-serve. But sometimes when they can't self-serve because the thing's too complicated or complex or urgent or nuanced or whatever, they will reach out to somebody. Now, if they've expended all that effort and then they go and speak to an agent, now if that agent is then having to navigate somewhere between sort of 9 and 15 on average different apps in order to be able to solve the largest proportion of customer inquiries, sort of the organizational structure or the technological makeup of that organization isn't really set up to help that agent be excellent in the moment.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the thing, because actually what's interesting about that is that those interactions, given the amount of effort that customers have had to expend in order to get to an agent, their expectations that you're going to be equipped and enabled and supported in order to deliver a fast and effective and efficient resolution to their inquiry, it just goes up.
Yeah.
And so if we're not doing our utmost to help those agents be excellent in the moment, then we're letting our employees down and our customers are down. And therefore, you can see in that simple example that actually a customer's experience and an employee or under agent's experience, they're very, very closely fused together. And if you get one right, then you can really facilitate positive outcomes in the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. And I think it's the employee experience component. I think it's easy to see it when maybe it's in real life and, you know, you're at a restaurant or in a hotel or, you know, there's those frontline employees that are, you know, you can physically see and interact with. But to your point, you know, there's the customer support scenario. There's even people further behind the scenes that have a huge impact. You know, I always go back to like product design. You know, somebody sitting in a room writing code, you think, okay, well, you know, we don't put them, they're not client facing or whatever. And yet they're designing the experiences that all of your customers are having. And if they don't understand and have empathy with your customers, you got a problem, right? So it's, sure. it's not just the more visible or even audible, components, right?
I mean, I have a great story about that. It's from a company, a UK company who are a financial services institution, and they're purely online and have been since their very inception. They've been around for about 20 years now. And one of the things that they did, to that point, is from time to time, they bring customers into their offices to actually do real transactions, to kind of log into the platform and do real transactions. And they take a whole bunch of, support people and engineers and coders and designers and marketeers and like a whole bunch of people, and then put them behind a one-way mirror in a soundproof room to watch the customer do something. And it's a fascinating exercise. And it's almost a bit like, imagine that thing from back in school days, when you could draw your fingernails down a chalkboard
right,
and it goes, it's that screech. That's how it makes people feel, because what you end up seeing in real time is the thing that you have made or the thing that you have designed or colored or worded or whatever smash into reality.
Yeah.
And you cannot escape kind of that sort of feedback. But what it's brilliant about doing is it's brilliant by shining a light on what seems obvious to you, i.e. it's this curse of expert knowledge, as it were. Yeah. So what seems obvious to you isn't always obvious to others.
Yeah.
And bringing your people and giving them as much exposure as possible to the trials and travails of the things that your customers go through is just going to help in their experience and help them do better work.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's what about the relationship? We've talked about employees and customer experience, that kind of, assuming kind of once they're a customer, that kind of relationship. But what about marketing and customer experience? I mean, a lot of organizations, even very large organizations that I work with as a consultant and advisor, customer experience can kind of be lumped under marketing in some case. A CMO will kind of get CX glommed onto their role for better or worse. I'll save my commentary on whether or not that's a good idea or not. In most cases, it always depends on the org too, but how do you think about this relationship between marketing and customer experience?
Well, I think broadly, I would say that marketing is a subset of customer experience. Hmm. Although if you think about it, if you step back and you look at it, that the actual words, then marketing is a function, is something that we do, whereas customer experience or experience is something that a customer experiences, pardon the pun.
Yeah.
And so we don't do customer experience. We can try and manage it. We can try and facilitate it, but we don't do it. We can't create somebody's experience. We can only kind of create the conditions for them to hopefully have a positive experience, because there's stuff that happens. And then there's what we make it mean.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so marketing, I think, is a subset of that, but it's actually more in that sort of doing sort of thing. But I think that from a governance perspective, I would suggest that there's a reasonable argument that says, marketing, because they're about, creating awareness and generating demand and building relationships with customers, then they should potentially own customer experience at an organizational level.
Yeah.
But that would require them expanding their portfolio massively, and that would include bringing things like customer service and retention and loyalty and all those things under one umbrella.
Yeah.
And that's a big ask for many organizations, and a big ask for CMOs who don't have that sort of experience across the piece to be able to manage that whole journey, as it were.
Yeah, I love the way you're describing this, because it is apples and oranges. They aren't the same. I would argue you can do customer support, that can be a function, just like you can do marketing. But I think thinking in that way, it does reframe what exactly is doing customer experience. Like what is doing customer experience mean? I love that way of thinking about it.
Before we continue, let's take a quick break.
If you're like many marketing leaders today, you're inundated with a need to improve the customer experience across an increasing number of channels and touch points, all while ensuring your team is performing well, innovating, and continuously improving. So how do you find the time to determine what's next for you, your team, your brand, and your customers? My company, GK5A, can help. Whether it is advisory services, evaluation of marketing technology platforms and solutions, or digital agencies and implementation partners, or assistance with creating strategic roadmaps and prioritization of efforts, we've done it all and served as an ally to Fortune 1000 brands in industries like financial services, healthcare, consumer electronics, professional services, and more. You can learn more about these services and contact us at www.gk5a. That's www.gk5a.com. Now let's get back to the show. So you had mentioned leaders earlier on in your book, you know, XL stands for experience leadership. Let's talk a little bit about that. And I want to, you know, I'm of the belief that leaders at this point, there may be a few holdouts or something, but I think most leaders are bought into the premise that, yes, we need to make investments in creating a better experience for customers as well as employees. Maybe don't know the best way to do it or the best way to focus or organize their, you know, their departments and divisions, as we were just talking about. But how should leaders think about measuring success in this experience leadership approach?
So I think that the way to think about it, I would suggest, is related to something I said right at the beginning, is that I'm interested in outcomes. And I think we need to think about measuring success in terms of outcomes, not metrics, but outcomes. Yeah. I think because your metrics are, it's a bit like this, it's a bit like an analogy, right? If you're driving a car, now your journey is about getting from A to B.
Yeah.
But your metrics, i.e. how much fuel you've got and the temperature of your engine and how much oil and your rev counter and all these things, those are your metrics that tell you how you're going along the way. But arriving at your destination is the actual safely and in one piece without much stress and all that type of stuff. That's the outcome that you want to generate.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where we leaders need to think about. It's like, what is the outcome they want to generate? And that requires them to think forward about the sort of vision that they have, the experience that they would like their customers to have at a future point in time. Then they need to think about what they need to do in order to build that or to kind of build towards that. And then kind of align it with their business and corporate objectives, such that the majority of things that they do, the main things that they do, should be able to tie to their business outcomes, i.e. generating greater demand, kind of being able to convert kind of more attention into custom, you know, increasing average spend, increasing frequency of spend, and maybe reducing cost of operations.
Yeah.
All of those things, those are the five, I would say, major and general levers in most businesses. Those are the sort of outcomes we should be focusing on. How do we tie our efforts to those outcomes, and they will drive customer numbers, revenue numbers, and profitability.
So in other words, instead of creating new KPIs or new measurements from having great CX in the organization, it's more about aligning CX and showing the relationship between those drivers, you know, like the ones that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because here's the thing, it's like, improving your customer satisfaction is no guarantee that you are going to generate more business.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the truth and the fact of the matter.
Yeah.
Your metrics are there to help you measure how you're going along the path that you're currently kind of on. And it's about measurement of progress.
Yeah.
But it's not the outcome.
Yeah, I love that way of thinking, because all anybody needs is yet another set of charts on a dashboard or anything like that. So, you know, being able to align that with the things that are already meaningful and important to the org, I think that just makes it so much more valuable.
Mm-hmm. It's also about relevance as well, Greg.
Yeah,
it's like, if you can turn around and go, my CX initiatives are aligned to these drivers, and you can go and have a conversation with your CFO and your CTO and your CEO about that. And they'll go, huh,
yeah,
well, that makes sense.
Yeah, agreed. From this experience leadership mindset, you know, you do a lot of work in the space and talk with a lot of companies. Is there anything, I don't know if cautions is too strong a word, but like, do you have any cautions or things to be cautious about when approaching things with this mindset? Like what are some best practices?
Well, yeah, I would put a health warning on this actually in terms of it. Maybe it's a caution, but I think the thing that I would say is that the health warning would be, this is not going to be easy. And actually the hardest thing to change, or the thing to be cautious about or be mindful of, is that the hardest thing to change might be yourself. Mm. Because this experienced leadership, it's the book is organized in a way to think about, what would you think about it? It's like, whether you're a leader in a position of authority, or you're just like an individual that leads, as it were, everything starts with you. And then it builds out to your team and your peers, and then your organization, and then your customers, and then the broader kind of world. So it starts with individuals.
Yeah.
And if we all have to take responsibility for seeing things differently, going the extra mile, doing better work, and so on and so forth. And that may actually force us to challenge what we do and how we do things in order to create that better work.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of the word of caution I would say, is like going, this is probably not an easy path and it might change you.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. I wanted to talk a little bit about your book, you know, which I mentioned, Punk XL, and I'd talk a little bit about the process for writing it. Mm-hmm. Certainly something I have personal interest in, you know, always kind of discussing that. What was kind of the impetus behind writing and collaborating? Because you had some contributors as well, you know, collaborating with the others that contributed to the book.
So the first thing about that, so so Punk XL came on the back of Punk CX, and because it's almost styled like a graphic novel in many ways.
Yeah.
It's like full color. It's inspired by punk music and punk fanzines and things. And so when I had this idea about the Punk XL, which I sort of, in inverted commas, described as being almost the second album.
Nice.
And it had that sort of second album feel to it. And I was a bit nervous about that. So I thought, first of all, one way I could test the idea, the hypothesis behind the book with a whole bunch of people, but I could also borrow an idea from hip hop and have a whole bunch of tracks on there. So you know, you have a track featuring such and such artist.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was a way of doing one sort of almost like testing whether or not I'm mad in terms of this hypothesis. And actually, I had a whole bunch of lovely people who came back and said, "You're not mad. I think this is great. Would love to contribute."
Yeah.
And I think it created a much richer kind of thing, and also a network of people, which was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of that was some of the reasoning kind of behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And definitely, you know, the visual component of it, just the way that this and the prior book, the Punk CX book are put together, just, I think it makes it interesting. It's, you know, we're talking about experience after all. So, you know, it's nice to have a book that you can experience in a slightly different way as well.
Yeah.
What did you, as I mentioned, you know, this is definitely not your first book, but, you know, was there anything you learned as you were writing, you know, anything you learned specifically when you're working on this book?
I think the biggest thing I learned about this was actually the collaboration with other people. And what was interesting, because it's like, no, I'm not just then writing a book, but I'm curating its content, but I'm also editing people's kind of thoughts and ideas. And in some instances was almost coaching people into a writing style, or trying to harness or find their voice, as it were. And that was really interesting. And I find it was hugely, hugely rewarding, particularly with people that weren't necessarily natural writers or hadn't done a lot of writing before. But when they got it and they produced something, and some of the stuff was like zany,
like, you know, so we've had poems in there, and like there's an angry letter, and it's beautiful, but it reflects different people's approaches to the challenge that was laid in front of them, which was fantastic, and it all fits in with that whole that sort of Excel framework.
Yeah. No, I think that's so great because, you know, I know a lot of people that, you know, I've written a few books myself and I like doing it. I enjoy it. So it comes easily and it's easy for me to devote the time to it. But I know a lot of people that, you know, really smart people have amazing ideas, but just, it's just kind of not their thing. You know, they're not going to sit down and write a book, or maybe they want to, but it just, you know, other things get in the way and stuff. So I love your approach there of coaching, and you know, has that kind of changed the way you think about your own writing?
No, not really. I mean, I think the thing is, I've always kind of like said that there's sort of two things. One is that I find there's many people that write books because they want it to take them somewhere, and then there's another group that write books that just happen to write books along the way.
Yeah,
and it's almost like a synthesis of stuff that they've been thinking about, and I'm very much in the latter kind of camp, because I'm continually kind of writing and exploring things, and I've always thought about my writing and podcasting and everything else is, I think about it as in this way, and I've used this way of describing it for years now, is like I always describe it as my public thinking digital notebook.
Yeah, I love it.
So it doesn't have to be right, it's just me thinking out loud and exploring things, and if it happens to be useful and valuable to other people, brilliant, I'm pleased. But I do it primarily for myself and for the conversations I have with other people. And if you focus on creating something which I hope that helps me understand and grapple and explain something to myself or to the person I'm kind of like talking to, then there's a reasonable likelihood and also hope that it's going to be helpful to others.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and one last thing along those lines, but last question before we wrap up here, because you do work in many mediums. What's your thought process of, you know, what's a book versus a podcast episode versus a blog post versus a video? You know, what's your way of thinking about, you know, you have a great idea, what's the best way to get that out?
Crumbs, I wish I was that diligent in my thinking. I sometimes just kind of, I have two things. I have almost like my two primary sources is I either write something, see something and I try and wrestle with it and write it out, or I arrange to have a conversation with somebody on my podcast and have a bit of a rummage around it.
Yeah.
And those two things can feed each other, but those are my kind of almost my R&D lab, as it were, the writing and the podcasting, and they kind of, they're the it's like a fusion of ideas. It's like we have a rummage around and we ruminate and boil and simmer and stir sort of things around, and that's where I come up with the best ideas. Talking to people is often the best way of figuring things out.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, again, I'd like to thank Adrian Swinsko for joining the show. You can learn more about Adrian and his work, including his books and podcasts and other things, by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to the Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom podcast, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe on your podcast channel of choice and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkilstrom.com. That's GREGKIHLSTROM.com. To get a copy of my latest book, House of the Customer, visit my website, or you can find it on Amazon or other retailers. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew.
It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.